All right. Great to see lots of new faces in the audience. How are ya? This is the Brisbane Infrastructure User Group, if you didn't know. So Brisbane Infrastructure User Group, tonight we're gonna be talking about Windows 10 and Edge. Edge is in Windows 10, of course. You can't get Edge any other way than with Windows 10, and how we can use Edge now in the enterprise. All right, so Infrastructure User Group, we're pretty much, you're in the wrong session.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. All right. So Infrastructure User Group, very quickly. We're just a bunch of people in the community talking about Microsoft technologies to other people in the community who use Microsoft technologies. No one here is really getting paid. We're just a loose bunch of people just talking about technologies in Microsoft generally. So the user group itself, first of all, we have to talk about safety because safety is important. So we are in a big tall building. If we start hearing whoop whoop or beep beep alarms and we're after hours, it means we have to immediately evacuate tonight. As I always say, here is a map provided to Microsoft from Google. So when we need to go today, we exit the building, follow the green signs, through to the fire escapes, and then we make our way across the river to the museum on the other side. So apparently that big part of water is going to help us be protected from the fire. This is very important safety information. Basically, if there's any issues, we orderly evacuate following the green signs out of the building, down the stairs. Okay. Big AU. So, talking about Big and the user group. How is everyone here on our mailing list? Do you know if you're on our mailing list? If you're not on our mailing list, or if you know someone else who wants to be on our mailing list, to join our mailing list, all you do is go www.bigau.org, and there's a join mailing list button. Click that, it'll ask for your name and email, and you'll be notified of all the upcoming events. You don't have to register, you don't have to attend the upcoming events if you just want to know what's happening or any offers. We recently had an offer for Ignite where we gave out discount codes, saved a substantial amount of money on some Ignite sessions. Okay, so we have some special offers for Ignite. We have lots of events coming up and even events from some other user groups within the Brisbane community. We'll send invites out about that. You can unsubscribe anytime, but at least you attend once a year, once every 2 years, every month, totally fine. Okay, but subscribe to the mailing list so you're always aware of what's gonna happen. Okay, really important. And the sponsor we always forget, but I never forget anymore because I put it on this slide deck. So tonight is sponsored by Microsoft. The food tonight is provided by Microsoft. The venue is provided by Microsoft. The air conditioning and cleaning, it is all provided by Microsoft. It's not cheap to have, who's? And your t-shirt. I bought this t-shirt actually. No, I seriously did. No, but, so it's not cheap getting facilities like this in the Brisbane CBD. And the fact that we can get this for free to put events on like this and pay for the food and drinks and it's all by Microsoft is great. So really, thanks for Microsoft. Big thank you about this for providing sessions like this because, you know, without their support, this wouldn't happen, you know, and reading sucks. Isn't it better to sit here and eat and get just spoon-fed information rather than having to read about it? I reckon. All right, so tonight. That's my wonderful car, by the way. It's made of Lego. Don't ask me how much it costs. It's really expensive. It is really expensive. So tonight, Edge in the Enterprise. All right. Edge, the browser, came with Windows 10, out of the box, very good, HTML5, very modern web standard browser. But when Windows 10 was originally released, there wasn't a lot of extensibility and manageability that you could do with the Edge browser in the enterprise. So tonight I'm gonna go through basically the new features that you can have with Windows 10 Edge in the enterprise. Using 1607, there was a lot of new features that were actually released. So the latest version of Windows 10 actually improved the manageability of Edge quite a lot. And so I'm gonna go through some of these new features tonight, how you can use them, and how you can really start actually making Edge. Hopefully by the end of the night, the aim is that you probably start considering, well, hey, Edge is a pretty good browser. Maybe we could start thinking about using it. If we go Windows 10 deployment, why are you staying on IE11, right? Maybe what you can start saying is, well, let's start using Edge as our default going forward. Or at least you'll have the knowledge of what it takes to make that happen. All right, I'm a realist. You know, you're not gonna go away and do it tomorrow, but at least you know, what does it take to actually do that? So, three browsers, one operating system. Who here has two or three browsers, or has Windows 10? Who here has Windows 10 in the organization? Right. Who here has at least two browsers on there? And I'm counting IE and Edge as separate. Who here has three? Because you got, let me guess, you have Internet Explorer, the browser we love to hate. I can use that term. The IE marketing team uses that term. So if they use that term, I can use that term. Edge, the browser no one uses. It's true. Fact. Well, no one. 2% of the world population is actually a big number. Okay, but it's still only about 2%. Well, there are many reasons why people don't use Edge. Hopefully tonight I'm going to be able to show you that Edge in the browser, Edge in the enterprise, and Edge in general is actually a really good, you know, alternative primary browser. And of course, Chrome, the browser we all have to install. All right, because you can't block, because you can install Chrome without administrative access. It's great. My website, grouppolicy.biz, has a great article on how you can block Chrome using AppLocker. So if you do want to actually block Chrome in your organization, it's completely possible. You can do it out of the box. But basically, a lot of organizations that I've seen, if you've got Windows 7, you've got IE, you've got Chrome. If you've got Windows 10, you've got IE, you've got Edge, you've got Chrome. Because some, you know, a lot of organizations, not all, and kudos to you if you can stop Edge and other third-party browsers getting into your organization. Absolutely fantastic. All right. Why? Well, let's face it, users want to install Chrome. They want to run Chrome. They want to use it because they go, it's web standard compatible and it's so much better than Internet Explorer. Yep, you want the modern web standards to work on your on all the latest modern web standards, and absolutely Chrome is your browser. Edge is pretty darn close, and I would challenge anyone to say, well, I can do this in Chrome, but I can't do this in Edge. And then if they say that, I'll say, you're probably on some experimental website that's doing a technology preview for a new feature in Chrome. Go on, Shane, do you have an example?
Yes, I do. In Chrome, you can set up different users.
Well, this thing called Windows has this concept of having multiple users.
No, but you can have the multiple browsers. You can I can have my mail open in portal.office.com. I can be logged on to a customer.
Well, I can do the same in Edge and IE if I go in private mode.
No, it's better than in private mode.
Okay. That's nothing to do with HTML standards, though, is it?
No.
But
it's still one thing different.
So why consolidate? Why consolidate your browsers in your organization from three to two, or maybe even one? Well, realistically, I don't think even at the end of the tonight you're going to think, well, I can consolidate everything down to Edge. Because let's face it, most, if not all of us, have legacy Internet Explorer websites in their organization that they need to manage. But the number one, and this is an interesting one, Edge is by far and away much more secure than Internet Explorer out of the box. However, if you'd saw the news today, someone has published something about some default protocol handle in Edge and how it handles something. So there is that at the moment. I haven't seen the response from Microsoft. I have had a look and read about it. So I really don't know if that's really a, wow, that's a really big hole, or look, you know, if you have this really specially crafted link and you get the user to click on the link, then yes, they can read the files off the local hard drive. Maybe that's good, maybe that's not good. I haven't seen the response from Microsoft about that yet, but needless to say, every browser, every piece of software in the world will have security issues. And what do? you fix the security issue and you move on. All right, but Edge has a lot of things about it that are inherently more secure and in the future are going to be inherently more secure to really make that really really the best from a security point of view browser you can deploy. Reduce management. What's easier than managing three browsers? Two. All right. If you can manage three browsers and reduce that to two, and if those management of those two browsers can be consolidated so that the management of both those browsers has an overlap, you kind of then down like, well, Edge and Internet Explorer has quite common manageability, all right? Chrome absolutely supports group policy and has group policy there, but there's a lot of other things about Edge and Internet Explorer that overlap, that assist with the manageability. So reducing management, because you know, we all want reduced management, yeah? No one wants to have to spend more time at work or more effort at work, right, managing their environment. And improve compatibility and usability. So the compatibility usability is kind of like, a user wants to go to a website and it should work. And that should be for every website. A user shouldn't have to think, what browser am I going to open? All right, it should just work for them. So if you can provide compatibility with for the users when they need it, and you can provide modern web standards to the users when they need it, and they can do it seamlessly, that makes it more usable for your users, right? If you can just get out of the way so they can do what they want, that's great. Okay. So first of all, I'm going to talk about security. Then I'm going to go through the management and then the compatibility side of things as well. So you can tell this is a slide deck here that I got from Microsoft. So one of the things about web browsers is, of course, it's one of the best attack vectors in your organization for your users. What application do users use most? The web browser. What do? They go on the internet. So it's the best way to get attacked. And things like ransomware, malvertising, they're all really coming in via the browser. Now there's lots of things that Microsoft have done to reactively help with this. Windows Defender really helps with identifying in real time websites that are malicious. All right, so that Microsoft in some cases are actually getting down to minutes, if not seconds, you know, if someone clicks on a program and runs a program that's malicious, possibly seconds, if not minutes later, the kind of the signature for that file or just the behavior of that file has triggered it, and it will start sending up alerts to the next users that start clicking on those programs. Really, hackers are really just using this as the attack vector. They have always used it, absolutely, but they're really just ramping up. And you get things like, you know, watering hole attacks, spear phishing, malicious code. These are things we've all seen. But really the problem is that they just keep upping the game, the bad actors, right? The malicious people out there. They just keep upping their game all the time, right? So how do you stay ahead of it, right? So this is... I show this to people and I always get someone, but. This is a point in time snapshot. And you know, like when you buy home or buy investments and you see the ads on TV saying past experience or the past history of this product does not necessarily mean the future outcomes. You know, when you're going to invest in our fund because we've had excellent returns, that doesn't mean in the future you're going to have excellent returns, but you know, it's a good guide. So take this with a grain of salt, but basically, you compare Microsoft Edge and the number of CVEs that were listed against Chrome and Firefox, almost straight away, you're talking about a browser that out of the box is having 50% less critical vulnerabilities exploited on it. All right? I don't know.
Is it the same?
No, this is Edge.
No.
Yeah. Look, I had the discussion with some people about 2 years ago about why they shouldn't use Chrome in their organization. And at the time, the Edge the Internet Explorer numbers were very similar. Like, more often, you know, Edge has critical vulnerabilities, absolutely. Can they be used in bad ways? Absolutely. Chrome has a bucket load more. Firefox has lots more. Okay, so Microsoft, for like since Windows 2000, or even like the XP Service Pack 3 days, you know, 2003 or 2004, have for the last 10 years been systematically deploying basically security best practice in how they design their products. Ground up, security is not an afterthought. When you have a browser that's just like going full steam ahead, right, and you're implementing feature after feature after feature, for some other organizations, I think that security is a bit of an afterthought. There have been some pretty, there's been some web RFCs in the HTML5 spec that have been pretty awful from a security point of view, to the point where they've just removed them, like some of the real-time collaboration. Like, no one said, stop, wait, what you're doing here is a bit of a security risk. You know, things like that can be quite, if you don't think about security on day one and you try to retrofit it, it's always going to be a lot, you're always going to be behind the ball. And I really think that's what the difference is. Microsoft thinks about security of these products first, especially with the browser.
There is a little self-fulfilling prophecy there in the sense that the more predominant browsers get the more predominant attention of the hackers. So there's a little bit of same, it's like when you talked about Apple not being vulnerable and
yep.
such. Well, at that stage, at the turn of the century, was 4 to 8% of
yeah.
the population, where Microsoft platforms
yeah.
were 88.
Pick on the biggest target.
Yeah, so there
yep.
is a little bit of potential discovery there.
I wish I should have got the slide, but I definitely had it. And it was like 2 years ago, Internet Explorer, which still had really decent amount of market share back then, definitely had fewer vulnerabilities, right? So, yeah, that's actually a valid argument. Bigger target, might get hammered on more so people find more things. But right now, well, actually, as of September, you know, Edge, yay. Microsoft aren't stopping there. So Microsoft has announced a new containerization described as a light virtual machine. They haven't gone out and actually out and out said this, but this smells a lot like a container that you would have in Windows 2016. They now support containers natively. Very similar, lightweight virtual machine that you basically run your browser in, and you have security boundaries here whenever you want to interact with other processes, whenever you want to interact, let's say you want to save a file to the hard drive called downloading, we all do that, the browser doesn't necessarily have access, so it has a virtualization barrier now to actually pass off to the next layer. And the virtualization boundary just basically means you're running essentially your browser in a virtual machine. So when you click close, if there's malware in there, you've just closed the virtual machine that your malware is running in, right? Think about that. If your browser does get hijacked, great, you're in your browser, but it's like, you know, the kids in the nursery, you know, you got the gate closed. Not that I'm saying you close the nursery and get rid of your kids, but you know what I mean? It's like you isolate the harm that you can do. So I've got, this is kind of how, I've got this other image here. This is the simple version, I like the simple. So this is really how it works. So basically what we have is if your Edge browser is going to untrusted sites and the internet is an untrusted site, if your browser is going to the internet, you're basically running a separate kernel, Windows Platform Services on top of that, and it's called Windows Defender Application Guard. It's an app container, basically. And that's running on top in Hyper-V, Lite, they called it like a light virtual machine, on your device, on your computer. If you go to the intranet, it's really important that things like, you know, pass-through authentication work. Okay, so if you go to the intranet, what's going to happen is you're just going to run it natively in your browser. Okay, so it is always, always important to make sure that your intranet websites are properly classified as intranet websites. Mainly because, you know, forever and a day, if you haven't done that and you're trying to authenticate to a web browser or a website internally, you need to pass your Windows credentials. Otherwise, you know, your users get really annoyed really quickly when they have to type the username and password in all the time, right? So basically, this is how it works. And really, they're just doing it in a way that makes it seamless for the user. I believe there is some hardware requirements, but it's really just, you know, does your CPU support virtualization unless you're running an Intel Core 2 Duo, you know, from 10 years ago that still doesn't support 64-bit, then really you should be fine, okay? So basically what they're saying is we're going to contain any issues that are going to happen with your browser in a virtualized boundary, all right? So Microsoft are really doing a lot to contain issues with the browser. But of course, don't go there. Edge is a new browser, and when they reset Edge, they basically went through and had a spring clean and just went, no more legacy documents, no more VB scripts, no more toolbars, browser help objects, no more ActiveX controls, right? And you can think, if you make something simpler, it's easier to secure. And that's what they have done. Like it says there, a ton of code was removed from the browser. Wonder why it goes faster. Could be that. Downloads. Yes? Edge does do preemptive downloading. Absolutely. There is no Silverlight in Edge, that is true. Well, when Edge first came out, it didn't have any add-ins extensions at all, except for Flash, which was a built-in because, you know, people kind of had to have that Flash. The other thing, of course, about Edge is, and this is kind of getting into manageability now, how do you patch Chrome? You pretty much let it patch itself and hope it works. Has like the automatic update, there's things you can do to kind of control it. You can push it out as an MSI file if you really want to just control it. But, you know, when the biggest browser in the world has a security vulnerability, you kind of want to get those patches out there pretty quick. Well, with Edge, you're basically leveraging your existing patch management strategy, your existing patch management solutions, so that you're not having to do two lots of patching to your browsers. No longer am I having to patch Chrome, and I'm having to use one tool to patch Chrome and using another tool to patch my operating system and IE. It's the same tool. Windows Update for Business, WSUS, SCCM, they can all patch Edge for you. All right, so whatever existing tools you are using in your organization to patch Windows 10, you leverage. So that's less management, which is good. Hopefully I'm building up a really good argument here for using Edge. All right.
There's one other thing.
Yes.
I don't enjoy Chrome.
Yep.
You can't get corporate support. You can't raise tickets. Whereas we don't often have any problems. Can raise tickets if we've got particular configuration issues and conflicts. We've been successful in getting that raised.
Microsoft knows how to talk the talk for business.
Yeah.
And if a business goes, I want support, Microsoft can provide it. And if you want support for your Gmail and your business, good luck. That is actually a really good point. If you want enterprise level support, you can't. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a really good point.
With the
1607?
Microsoft for the OS level.
Yes.
I don't know whether it includes Edge patches or not.
Yes.
It's going for a monolithic update patch.
You're absolutely right. So with 1607, it's going to be whatever the next version of Windows 10 is. So right now they're testing it in Insider Preview. Right, what they're saying is that Windows 10 generally, they're releasing a single update to the operating system every month. So they roll up all the patches, put it together, and they deploy it. All right, so that's easy, right? Microsoft no longer has to support an infinite number of permutations of patches installed and not installed in an organization. Because if you give an organization 10 patches, I don't know, what's 10 to the power 2? a lot. Or even if it's 15 patches. You tell me. Look, you're absolutely correct. There is some pros and cons. But the pros is that if Microsoft is supporting less permutations, then they can focus on general overall. But they're not just the whole OS. It's the operating system. I think the browser is still, patched separately in that rollout?
My question, since you mentioned WSS, so
yeah. I mean, things like Office, things like the browser, a lot of them, they're rolling a lot of them together, but it's not one complete monolithic patch anymore. But then going forward, post Redstone 2, whatever the next version is, what Microsoft are going to do is they're actually going to back, the patch is actually starting to get quite big now, especially for version upgrades. Your patches are actually then going to get reduced down to deltas. So you're going to get cumulative updates that are actually incremental. Yeah. But basically what it means is when you start rolling out new versions of the operating system from current branch for business and things like that, you're not having to download 2-3 gigabytes per machine, which I think they've said over the lifetime of a machine so far is like, well, if this machine's on the internet, it's downloaded 40 gigs already, right? So they're reducing that and deltering that as well. That whole patching and whether or not rolling it all together is a completely other argument, but it is, you're right. I mean, it is possible. But in saying that, Internet Explorer patches have always been cumulative for a very long time. Internet Explorer, by all means, is cumulative. You would get an Internet Explorer patch and there'd be like 10 patches in it, but it'd be one patch.
Probably my question is, with regards to that new patching regime, was it likely that the Edge patches will be included in the OS ones and you don't have a pick and choose aspect?
So right now, Edge is part of the OS in Windows 10. It's not part of the OS in 2016. You do not get Edge on 2016, and there is no way you can download or install it, which actually leaves people with terminal services a bit out in the wild because you can't actually install Edge. But
so what browser do you have? Just IE on 2016?
Just IE. That's all. Well, you can install Chrome, right? Now we're back to two browsers. We don't want to do that. But if you're not, all right, let's exclude Citrix terminal services. Why the heck are you using a browser on a server? Why the heck are you even installing the GUI on 2016?
Oh, no, yeah. Right. Before RDS.
Yeah, RDS. I will park that and say you've got a point. Internet Explorer is your only out-of-the-box option. If you're on a server, though, I mean, let's face it, Internet Explorer on a server by default is in enhanced security mode anyway. Pretty much everything's disabled. Has always been disabled. Right. So, kind of talking about manageability. And when Edge first came out, the manageability wasn't so great. I'm not allowed to swear, so I'll say Edge browsing manageability used to be suboptimal. To the point where it's like, you know, it's just, there was just no talk about using Edge in the enterprise, really. 1507 came out. It had limited group policy settings. You had 10 group policy settings, 10, that was it. Most notably, you couldn't even configure the homepage. Yeah, corporates love it when you can't configure the homepage and users can just go wild. Now, I'm a big proponent of, you know, giving users the flexibility to do what they want, but at the end of the day, you want to be able to at least set some sort of preference on a homepage for your users, because they always get lost and they go, what was the name of the homepage again? So, there's been another release of Windows 10 since then. 1511, homepage support, hurrah! But you could only configure it per computer, which is so great, because you want to configure your administrator on the computer to have the same homepage as your regular users. Better than nothing, all right? Microsoft are revving, right? If this was the Microsoft of 6 years ago, wait another 3 years before you get some sort of new manageability feature. Here we didn't even wait, what? 6 months, and we're getting new manageability features. Okay, give them a little bit of credit. 1607, homepage support for group users and computers. Yay! And a bucket load of other group policy settings. Okay, really important. group policy settings there. So let me demonstrate, if you have Windows 10 in your organization, how you can get from there to here. All right, so I'm just gonna sit down here. I'm gonna go to demo mode, because I've talked a lot. So first of all, I have literally a domain controller running 2012 R2. You do not need any functionality level or any Active Directory level extra to support the new group policy settings for Edge. I get that question quite a lot. Group policy, in only the far most exceptional circumstances do you need a special schema or a special version of Active Directory to support those group policy settings. Group policy settings are normally published via ADMX files, right? So kind of how do we get there? So first of all, I have, so this is my demo environment. I have a domain, corp.local. Hopefully it works. Oh, come on. It's still responding somehow, hang on. Yay, came good. So I have people and I have Edge users, and lo and behold, the user account Alan is the Edge user. Okay, so for the purposes of this demonstration, I'm gonna be using Alan as a demo. But here I have a new group policy setting. Hang on, nothing up my sleeves here. Create a new group policy here, Edge. Settings. So for the purposes of tonight, I'm gonna be using this. So if we go in, I'm on 2012 R2, and I go in, administrative templates, Windows components, how many times have you gone, oh, there's the Edge group policy settings there? No, that's the Edge UI settings for Windows 8. You know how you swiped in from the Edge? That's what those policy settings. So I've got Internet Explorer. Number of times I've gone there, I'm like, oh, Edge, it, no. No. All right, what I'm trying to say is I'm starting from 2012 R2 here. I don't have Edge because 2012 R2 didn't have Edge. So how do I start going down the path of Edge? Right, you might be in an organization where you've deployed Windows 10, the 1507. So here we have a policy definitions folder. Policy definitions folder, you know, I'm a group policy guy. I know what policy definitions folder are, but basically it's a central repository of ADMX files, and ADMX files are the definition of all the settings you have in your group policies, right? Every time there's a new operating system release, Microsoft releases a whole bunch of new ADMX files. They're always found in C, Windows, policy definitions. That's the local copy, C drive. If I copy that folder to the policies folder in my Active Directory sysvol, all my group policy then instantly inherit the settings from that central location. So I only have to update my ADMX files in one location. So that's policy definitions. Just in case you didn't know, it's really important. It's been around for a while. It's been around since like the Vista days. Yay, Vista. Who likes Vista? No one? Okay. So here, I have a few other different policy definitions. So here I have the policy definitions here from 1507. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to copy these. You can actually, having policy definitions, these are the definitions of the policy, but they're not the actual settings. You can actually delete this folder or do whatever, and your group policies still work. All right? You're just changing the definitions. You're changing the list of settings in there. So what I've done is I've copied over the 1507 policy. So these are a bunch of new ADMX files. I copied this from a Windows 10 1507 release C Windows policy definitions folder. So if I now go in and edit this group policy, please work. Yay. So now I have, oh, Edge, no, that's not it. Microsoft Edge, woohoo! I've got my 10, count them, 10 group policy settings. Yay, that's not a lot, okay? So this was what you got on day one, all right? So, okay. That's not good enough, right? We need to kind of go a bit further. So how do I get my new settings? All right. So here's a step on the way. I'm gonna rename this 1507. I'm gonna copy the Windows 1607, Windows 2016 group policy settings. And I'm going to copy them. All right, and I'm just going to rename that back to policy definitions. Edit those. There's my Edge UI, and they're gone, right? And I discovered this. Windows Server 2016 does not have Edge. So it does not have the Edge group policy settings in the C Windows policy definitions folder. So if you've done what I've done in previous lives and you just take the latest and greatest operating system, Windows Server 2016 is the latest operating system out by Microsoft, you don't actually get the ADMX files for Edge. All right, so what can you do? You can use the Windows 10 1607 ADMX files. That works. But the 1607 group policy settings otherwise are actually the latest. So how do we go from here? So what I can do is I can go in, and here's two I've selected earlier, but basically what I've done is I've gone through here, and what was the name of that? Microsoft Edge. All I've done is I've taken the Microsoft Edge ADMX file out of this, and I've actually gone up and taken the ADMX file out of this folder here, and these two files here. So I'm just taking, basically I'm selectively grabbing the Edge settings only. Now policy definitions. This one. First one I need to copy is the ADMX. These are the actual definitions of the settings. And then there's the ADML, and the ADML, if you didn't already know, are the language definitions. So this the way that it can support multiple languages is that you have an XML that defines the settings, and you can have a bunch of ADML files which define whichever the localized language you have. So I've just copied those two files from my Windows 10 1607 install. And now I go in, talking about PlayStations next door. Microsoft Edge, and we've got lots more group policy settings now. I can configure home pages. I can configure favorites. Who'd have thought putting favorites in Edge was important for users? I can configure a lot more settings. Now this by all means is not a definitive list. Microsoft are working on more policy settings all the time. All right, but I think we can all agree that being able to configure home pages for users was a pretty big addition to Edge, and a pretty big stumbling block from using Edge in a corporate environment. Okay, look, go through here, kind of look at what other settings you can use. The user-based settings, there are also computer-based settings in there as well. But basically, this is how you enable the new group policy settings for Edge in the environment. So, yay. So very quickly now, yeah, so that is a good one, and I'm going to show that one soon.
No,
Alan, yes.
Does the user also have to be running Windows 10 16.07 to get the policy applied?
Yes. Yes. So Edge on anything less wouldn't actually. You'll see the setting. You'll see. So will you need to run 1607 to get the 1607 group policy settings? Yes. If you applied the 10 group policy settings there that were with 1507, they would still apply. All right, no problem. But any new settings, no. Now, if you're on current branch of your business, you have 12 months. You have to upgrade. Unless you're on long-term servicing branch, in which case Edge is not included, right? There is no Edge in long-term servicing branch. You have 12 months to upgrade. You have to upgrade. That is just the support life cycle of current branch. You can defer using Windows Update for Business. You can defer. You can defer your major updates, absolutely. So current branch for business is actually like usually 3 months after the current branch, which is your consumer update. Okay, so 1607 comes out, 3 months later, they'll start pushing, probably about now, 1607 for enterprises, and it'll start coming down via Windows Update for Business, things like that. So the answer is no, but you have to get there within 12 months. And if you're on, it's kind of like you've had to accept you're on that fast moving stream, right? Yeah, you can defer, but kind of you really got to think of, you know, why are we trying to defer? You know, there's
16 or 7 is the anniversary update, right?
Was the anniversary update, yeah.
It's causing too much trouble.
Is it?
Yeah.
But okay. But you got 12 months.
As I said, yeah. There's no way around it.
Yeah. There's another version coming. There's another version of Windows coming. Like they've talked about creative update. The creator update recently. So there's another one coming, it'll come next year. And that'll be within, so maybe you can, I don't know if you can jump. I don't know if you can actually jump versions. I suppose if you're on 15.11, you could probably jump over 16.07. I don't know. Your mileage may vary. You need to test that yourself. So, yes. All right. So browser and browser compatibility system. Browser's an operating system. This is the browser matrix. This is the permutations of operating system and native browsers you can have. All right. The really interesting ones are Windows 7 has a lot of browser support, and Internet Explorer 11 also goes across Windows 7. Right? Kind of got some good intersection right here, right? And then from a support point of view, Internet Explorer 8. Of course, if you had if you went from Windows XP to Windows 7, you probably upgraded to IE 8 first, and then jumped to Windows 7. And once you got everyone over to Windows 7, you probably jumped down to Windows Internet Explorer 11. And now you've jumped over to Windows 10. Can kind of see where we're going. You've jumped over. But from a supported point of view, IE9 is still supported on Vista. But Windows 7 and Internet Explorer 11, Windows 8 won't. No, who here has Windows 8 deployed? Oh, okay. Not 8.1, 8? Your browser's not supported. Windows 8.1, you got IE 11, and Windows 10, you got IE 11. So basically, from an enterprise corporation point of view, I can pretty much say this is the minority. All right? So let's ignore that. So you're on Windows 7, you're on IE 11, and then you jump to Windows 10. Right, so now I have two browsers. I'm back to two browsers. Great. How do I split between them? So Internet Explorer has an option called Enterprise Mode. Basically, you can now use Internet Explorer as IE8. It's basically, these are all the available dock modes. So IE11 can simulate IE5, IE7, IE8, IE9, IE10, IE11. Can simulate those browsers quite effectively. And I've heard some numbers where once you get to enterprise mode, IE8 enterprise mode, it goes another level again where the way it handles ActiveX controls, not just HTML, but how it actually handles browser help objects, really is just very good compatibility with your legacy IE8. And then they've also introduced it in IE10, or down level versions. So basically, Internet Explorer 11, no, yeah, that's right. They've introduced this on Internet Explorer 11 on all the previous supported platforms, that last slide you saw. So you've got different dock modes that you can select. You can basically go, yeah, and how do you do that? Well, you just tell the user to hit F12 and select whichever option that you want them to use. They know, don't they? They know what mode their website should render in. Surely. They use it all the time. Why wouldn't they know? Right? They know when they want to use Chrome. It's like, I want to use Chrome on this website. Why? Because I just want to. And it's like, well, why don't you want to use this in IE8 mode? It's like, So obviously we need a better way, and there is a better way. Enterprise mode can be controlled by group policy and MDM. And so what you can do is you can use enterprise mode, which is basically a list that you maintain that says this website will render in this mode, this mode, this mode, this mode, or this mode. And you can just specify. Users don't have to know what site. That's been out for a while. These are the group policy settings for reference. And just reference. I'll show you how it works. Back to demo. Because demos are good. No, enterprise mode is absolutely in IE11. It's even in... Yes, absolutely. So, it is now. Thanks for taking my... my thunder. All right. So, what we're going to do is we're going to set up first an IE enterprise mode list. This is a pretty simple list. I've just started with one here. It's one I created earlier. Basically, what I'm saying is I have a corporate intranet, and it's intranet.corp.local, and I want to open it in IE8 because it works in IE8, and I want to open it in IE11 because I got some ActiveX control, because remember, ActiveX controls have been removed from the browser in Edge, so they don't work in Edge. So I want to open it in IE11, all right? But I also have another intranet website somewhere. I call it Intranet 2, very creatively named. And it uses modern HTML, and it doesn't have any of those crappy ActiveX stuff. And so I want that to open in Edge. So this is just an XML file. And if I actually open this XML file, that's it. All right, I stick this on a network share somewhere, and I point my browsers to that. I'm going to show you how to do that. And it will pull down that list, and it will honor that list above all else. Right, above all else. Right, so that means that even if your website says, no, I must render as IE5, and you say, no, you must render as Edge Standard or IE11, because some software developer put some meta tag in the code somewhere and no one's willing to change the HTML meta tag to change how it renders, because no one's willing to touch the corporate website, because then the whole business will die, you can override that without touching a line of code. Yay! Who wants to code? Not me. So what I'm just going to do, you can just save it. Every time I save this, version 42, there's actually a version number that it keeps track, version 43. So if you actually have a look, there's actually a version number here. So that's how it knows if the version's changed. So the browser will check that if the version's changed. So now, I've got my list, all right? I've got the sites that I want to send to Edge, and I've got the sites that I want to send to the intranet. How do I push that out? Let me just close these down first. So Edge settings, first of all, what I need to do is configure. Here's the URL I created earlier. I've actually got that XML file hosted on a web share. So if I want to test that, I can, there you go. It's just a HTTP path. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually configure the browser. First of all, I'm going to start with Internet Explorer. And this is where I have to find it. Yeah, Microsoft used to say Internet Explorer was great because it had lots and lots of settings. It's really bad when you want to start looking for that one setting that you know is there, but you just can't see it in front of your face. I'm looking for enterprise mode site. No, that's not it. Hang on. Sorry, I am actually. There is an enterprise mode site list one here. I can't believe I can't find it. Let users turn on. No, no, no. No, no, sorry. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, it's only at the bottom. Cool, of course it is. So what I'm gonna do is say, use the enterprise mode website list. So now the browser is basically gonna honor that setting. All right, so now if I jump over to my user here, Alan, I can actually, and here's a nice little flag that you can about colon compat shows me all the compatibility settings that are actually applied to my computer. So right now I can actually filter, you know, there's the Microsoft compatibility list, here's enterprise mode site list. There's no enterprise mode site list applied there in Edge. But that was actually an IE setting. So internet. confer, and a compat. Same thing. So these are all the compatibility op flags you have in your browser. So I'm going to do gp update. This is my intranet. Now notice I actually have here, I should have done it earlier. Sorry, my bad. Here it's saying enterprise mode is on because in my enterprise mode site list manager, and to kind of prove, yay. So you saw before how I had about colon compat and there was nothing there. Now about colon compat is applied. It's actually saying from enterprise mode, open intranet.corp.local. in IE8. So here, I have a really old intranet. What if I click on the new intranet? Internet Explorer knows that that is a HTML5 and that you want to open an Edge. So it's going to send it to Edge, right? Now, if I click on the old intranet, Edge doesn't know what to do with it. So it just tries to open it. Now, yes, my example is really bad, right? But you get that. The problem is that once it used to be, once you dumped the user into Edge, you never went back to IE. And if the user wants to go back to a site that only works in IE, they don't know the difference between Edge and IE, right? They don't know that for X site, you have to type it in here, and Y site, you have to type it in there. All right, if I'm in Internet Explorer here and I go to the internet, which is my wonderful simulation of the internet, right? They don't know that, but then the website's not going to render properly. So we need it better. All right? Okay. How are we going to do this better? oh, there's another one there in Edge, full HTML5 support. And here in IE, doesn't support the HTML5 tag. Right. Okay, so now we're going to jump back. So now what we want to do is come back to that one. I'll do this one. So send all sites not included in the enterprise mode site list to Edge. So what this one does is if it's not classified, which is like the entire internet, is not on a static list that you maintain, it's just going to send it to Edge. So what's the advantage of doing it that way? So of course what it's going to do, GP update 4, so I'm just going to close the browser here. Close this. I should really set that as a home page, hey? Which I can do in Internet Explorer for many years because it's always had that feature. Actually, I'm just going to open that again in case that didn't apply. That's easier. So now, hopefully, when I click on the internet, because I have said that I'm going to send all default websites to Edge if it's not on the enterprise mode site list, I have now set Edge as my default browser for the internet. Right? Do we kind of agree that Edge is probably the best browser for internet-facing sites? Out of IE and Edge, okay, let me reword that. If you have IE and Edge, Edge is the better one, right? Yeah, okay. So, if I click on the internet, yay, it worked. So what I've done now is IE is only going to open URLs that it knows about in IE. Now remember there's another one which is the new intranet, but I explicitly said the new intranet would also open in Edge, right? So now what I've done is I am now directing the vast majority of traffic away from IE to Edge, more secure, better HTML web standards. In fact, if you have a look at some of the latest HTML5test.org, Edge with the flags turned on is only a few points below Chrome with flags turned on, the latest build of Chrome, from a HTML5 supportability point of view. Oh, it's .org, isn't it? If I can type the URL properly. Is that it? Nope. Who knows the name of the website? HTML5 test. Test. That's it. 467, that's today, compared to, now I'm not running inside a preview. If I'm running inside a preview, it'd be better. If I could go to about colon config and turn all the flags on, that'd even be a higher score. Pretty close. Now let's go one more. Edge, all flags enabled. Pretty darn close, the same HTML, well actually no, it's not the same actually, because if you had a look at Venn diagram, Chrome supports some HTML5 tags that Edge doesn't support, and then Edge supports some HTML5 tags that Chrome doesn't support, so it's not a complete overlap, you know, but if you're talking about HTML5 support, Edge currently is very good. Edge, the release insider preview with all the flags turned on, is really excellent. Test it for yourself, HTML5 tests. All right. So you can kind of go through here. It's like, does it support shadow DOMs? No, partially. It's like you look at some of these things and you go, really? Speech recognition, yeah, because I want my browser to understand what I say when I swear at it. I think you can turn on that as well. See, I've got fast networking, full screen, a couple of the options. I thought database was something in about colon config. No, anyway. What I'm saying is, you got an excellent web browser for the internet, now is your default browser for the internet. Problem I do have though, if a user wants to go back to the intranet, they're still stuck in Edge, and if that needs an ActiveX control, that's not nice. So how do we then complete the loop? We're gonna complete the circle, it's the circle of life. Let's talk about it, Simba. So, what we now do is we go to Edge, and we have Enterprise Mode Site List. Well, that looks really familiar. There you go, Ray. Thanks for taking my thunder. Hey, Ray, did you know Edge has Enterprise Mode Site List support now?
That was the one that was passing us because we had Enterprise Mode.
Yeah. So remember, my Enterprise Mode Site List has two sites defined. One says open up intranet in IE11. One says open up intranet 2 in Edge. So Edge is now pointing to the same configuration file, all right? Which basically means it now knows when to open a website in IE11, because it has the compatibility list.
If your web server goes down,
yes.
Are those settings cached, or is your enterprise
now? No, but there are many things you could do. You could have a DFSR replicated, and then have multiple websites. You have DNS round robining, you could have it load balance. HTTP is one way. You can even reference a file share and have it on a name. I think you can reference a file share. Use sysfol, replicate. There's heaps of ways you can make it, but the browser caches that file. So it will look at that file. In fact, here's a little known fact. Internet Explorer, if it hasn't got a config file, will look at it straight away as soon as you open IE. If you've already got a version, it waits 65 seconds, which makes it a pain in the butt to actually demo. It waits 65 seconds before it actually gets, and it pulls that file after you open the browser. So you open the browser, you wait 65 seconds, and it goes, hey, is that file there? If not, it just keeps looking at the local cache copy. And remember how I said there was an XML version number in there? That XML version number, if it's different, will change it. So you can actually reset it back to one and it will pick it up. It just has to be different. Doesn't have, if it's the same, it won't read that file because it says, oh, I've already got that version. But if you go from 45 back to 43 because you made a mistake and you rolled the file back, you want to push the rollback out because you want to undo your mistake. So that's pretty handy, you know. So anyhow, so I've applied this back to my Windows 10 1607 machine. I'm just going to close everything down. Okay, so I'm a user. I wake up in the morning and go to my really old intranet, and then I do some surfing the internet. That's pretty cool. And then I go to the new intranet. Hey, the new intranet's really good, but then I'll need to go back to the old intranet, and I... No, this is actually a problem. No, I did that. So I think... No, I think what this is actually that 65-second thing. So you read any good books? No. there is. Don't look at that. I have an email. Great. You could always be careful when you're opening websites, especially like Bing homepage. I was in a tech ed session once and the guy opened a page and it was like Steve Jobs retires due to illness. And at a Microsoft event and the whole crowd laughed. I'm like, oh, that's inappropriate. But it was completely, you know, he just opened a browser, right? You know, but you know, it was just if you had a group policy that set the home page, it wouldn't have been a problem. You could have set it to a blank. That's a really good idea. Look, I'm either just stalling here at the moment to let 65 seconds goes by while I log off. So I'm hoping... The new intranet. Think. You know what I'm going to do, just to tweak it. Remember that just pushes the version number? Right, so now... Thank you. Site. Sorry. You guys are forgiving, it's okay. Pity it's being recorded. ESLM.xml. Ah. ESLM. All right. So that is there. Yay! I'm going to say it waited 65 seconds, or I could have just refreshed the cache. Or... These things aren't easy to... What? Oh, yeah, that's in my virtual machine. It's my virtual machine. It's protected. It's not on the internet. Okay. Anyway, so like I said, it takes 65 seconds for the cache to time out. In a corporate environment, it takes 2 hours to push the group policy out. Sorry, it took a little bit longer than normal, but you kind of get the point. So what I've done now, so let's think about it. I now have a definitive list of all the sites in my organization that I need to open in Internet Explorer. Who has a pretty good idea of that in their own organization? I know what sites need to run an IE in my organization. Yeah? No? If you don't, there's actually, on my website, and there's things, you can actually turn enterprise mode telemetry on and actually send it in as a web call back to a central web server and log it in an IIS log. There's some references to Microsoft that will show you like two lines of ASP.NET, logs it to an IIS log. You can actually keep a real-time track of all the websites that are opening and what mode they're opening in and why they opened in that mode. You collect that information, you can open it through a spreadsheet. There's other third-party tools that allow you to process that. Let's say you do know all the sites in your organization that are supposed to open in Internet Explorer. Let's say there's 10, right? What do we do? Well, you start at 10 and you just start attacking them. Let's say you maintain it in this list. Let's say we had 10 and they're all open in IE. Now that I've got Edge by default opening all the URLs, I can now get rid of this one, right? Kind of, because this is also an intranet site. I would still maintain intranet sites that you can open an Edge in this mode. There is a policy in IE that says to open up all sites not on the intranet site in Edge. So you can kind of start off there. Basically what I'm saying is that the less assumptions you make in this list, the better, because then things aren't going to fall through the cracks. But basically, you start with a list, Internet Explorer 11. As you address Internet Explorer 11 compatibility issues, you remove it from the list. Okay, website 1, great, opening an Edge. Website 2, opening an Edge. You've got a list that you just start whittling down. And then hopefully, before you know it, you no longer use Internet Explorer in your organization anymore. Or at least you've got it down to, you know, the bare bones, right? You got it down to those sites that require ActiveX controls and just are never not going to require ActiveX controls. And everything else is going to Edge. Edge is great because it supports HTML5. Edge is great because it's arguably a more secure browser. And obviously a more secure browser is good for your users, it's good for you. So while the utopia is that you eventually get this list and you get all the sites off that list, may or may not happen, but at least you have a list that you can attack and work on and get to a point where hopefully, you know, you can manage it. But in the meantime, let the browser default to IE. Oh, to Edge. let the default browser default to Edge. Now, if you're running Windows 7 in your organization, this enterprise mode site list still works. Okay, all it then does is it reverts back to a mode where it says, do I open this website in IE11 mode or do I actually open it in IE8 compatibility mode? So maybe, you know, I got IE8 enterprise mode here. So there is actually a default mode. It actually used to be called Edge Standard. And all that meant was, you know, you're living on the edge, where it would say, support the latest and greatest. The HTML meta tag is still Edge, right? It's basically saying, just support whatever the latest and greatest HTML tags are. Now they've just got it as default mode. But you can see here how you can specify, you know, what document mode and open an IE11 Edge, or just no preference, right? If you just want to start whittling it out. So, that's pretty much Edge in the enterprise. Oh God, I didn't want to go.
Windows 7 has no problems with the tags and the XML being Edge.
Well, it's not going to open it in Edge.
No,
that's for sure. I haven't tested it. I'm going to assume, you need to test this yourself, that if you have one that says open in Edge, what it's going to just do is try to open it in IE11 native Edge standards mode, the latest HTML5 standards that it can support. It's just going to say, just make that work as close to, you know, fullest HTML5 support standard that IE11 can support. Because no, enterprise mode is in Microsoft Edge, right? Yeah. But and the enterprise mode is also in Internet Explorer users, Windows components, Microsoft Internet Explorer. It's top level there. It was hard to find in the long list. So if case you've already started using enterprise mode in the organization, know that they've actually released a new XML standard, right? So it's a version 2. So there are actually two versions of the Enterprise Load Site Mismanager. Get the one V2 schema. You can just import a V1 schema. All the versions of Internet Explorer now that are supported support the V2 schema. The V2 schema is just easier to read, easier to manage, easier to maintain. I think basically they had an attack at it. You know, someone thought, hey, XML, that's easy. And then they probably rethought that and thought they can do the XML a little bit cleaner. And here's kind of like where I'm summing it up. Basically, lower management overhead, higher security, better usability for your users. Edge in the enterprise. So that's pretty much the end of my session now. I do have some bonus content if you want to see it. Who here knows that you can actually configure the start menu in Windows 10? You've been able to do it for a while. Who here knew that you could configure the taskbar in Windows 10? The taskbar. Yeah. You did, because I told you. Oh, sorry. Yeah, any questions about Edge? I should finish up with questions about Edge and the enterprise. It's not. If it's not, then enterprise mode site list is your friend. Now, what's actually, here's something. What's the actual, do you know, is it office.com? Of course it does. Well, that's really interesting. So this is the compatibility list. This is Edge. So let's actually open up Internet. Portal. Office.microsoft.com compatibility list. As pushed. Is it? SharePoint.com. Well, let's have a look. Maybe they were too ashamed. Well, actually, hang on. The Microsoft compatibility list is there to override websites that say, for example, I must open in IE8 or IE5 mode. And in fact, there's absolutely no problems with it opening in a different version. The Microsoft compatibility list is basically saying, well, either the website's saying it should open in modern standards, but should open in old standards, or it should open in old standards, but it says it should open in modern. If office.sharepoint.com or sharepoint.office.com or whatever the website is, declares open me in this mode, the browser should honor that. Right, and Edge, unfortunately, doesn't have those backwards compatibility modes. So this could be a point where, yes, you need to deploy compatibility, enterprise compatibility lists and explicitly say, open it in IE. So Edge knows to send it back to that site back to IE. Because Edge otherwise doesn't know the compatibility modes. It only knows Edge standards like modern web standards. So maybe that would fix that, enterprise mode site list manager. I want to say yes. I think startupcorp.local would work, but then you're going to get a lot of things that you might want to override. Although you can put in then explicit overrides. on that. So you can actually, one of the things I know you can do, that's a good question, is, for example, indeed. Why is that a completely different intranet? Oh, I know why. Hang on. Tech head. So you can put in sub URLs like this. It will accept wildcards. What? Can't validate the URL. So actually this is something what the tool does is that the tool actually tests the URL to make sure the URL you're typing is valid. But then it says, do you want to add it anyway? It's valid in the XML. Well, unless you want to sit here for another 65 seconds and we'll find out, I would say give it a go. All right. Oh, well, yeah, that's actually bad. Well, maybe that. No, it's not going to let it, is it? You could do corp.local. You could try that, and maybe it will assume the wildcard. Good question. I'd love to find out for you, but So I know 100%. For example, like this, you've got intranet.corp.local and you've got a subfolder like that. You can absolutely define a subfolder to have a different compatibility than the parent. This will 100%, I know this 100% works. Like, because, you know, you've got a subfolder within your website, you host multiple websites on the same server, and they're just all sub URLs, you know, like subfolders like that. 100% that works. All right. I don't know whether or not if you had like intranet.corp.local and corp.local, and then you had intranet 2. Yeah. Just host name, like your host name URL, just a short URL, is it? Well, I mean, if they're all sitting underneath the same master URL, then all the subfolders under that would be treated the same, unless you explicitly called them out. Yes. Yeah, so any permutation underneath that, unless you explicitly call it out, will honor that compatibility tab. Yes. Sorry, I couldn't answer that better. I hope that at least helps. All right. Cool. Yes, go.
Every time you switch between browsers, does it open a new session or does it go back to the other browser?
It opens a new tab in the same browser. So, like, let's have a look. Right, so this is, I know what you mean. So you got a new, yeah, but then if I go, it's a new tab. So in Edge, it opens a new tab. I wonder if that is the, a new tab is open. Where is, let Internet Explorer open up in a new window, open up in a new tab. Okay. Let's try that. So that IE setting, if that's what it is, let's have a look. New, and then, no. Unfortunately not. Even though Internet Explorer says, open links from another program, well, it thinks it's great. Open the current tab or window. Oh, No, is that one? No, that's tab groups. No, that's only tab groups. Always open pop-ups in a new tab. When a new tab is open, open a new tab page. Letting the Explorer decide, open up in a new window. It's, yeah, that's, yeah, it's a, hey? No, I don't think that's even an option in Edge. So one of the things they've done with Edge, and this is the mentality of Edge, is that they really want to simplify. Open new tabs. See, there'd be nothing in here that talks about going back to IE. Start page, previous, specific. See anything there? No? Yep. All right, yep, cool. I'm willing to try that. Okay, new intranet. Fingers crossed. No. Ah, but if I keep clicking. So it's kind of like, well, I've already started one process, so I'm just going to keep it in the same process. Who here doesn't have 100 tabs and browsers open on their computer anyway? Right? And 100 programs on top of that as well. Yes, that stumped me. Well, do you want a Bluetooth speaker for stumping me on that question? Here you go. You just got a freebie. Congratulations.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
SSL management in Edge.
Yes.
Can you actually see the properties of the certificate now? Because before, you were not able to see anything.
Like
expiry date.
Just picking a bank here.
Completely. It would only tell you that it's good and that's it. Yeah. It's valid or not, but you can't even see when it expired. Yeah. Which CA created the certificate.
Completely unrelated, but Star SSL are now no longer in Chrome and Firefox, so killed them. They got rid of Star SSL. So
So, maybe, yeah, you could just tell them to open it in IE, I suppose, and download it that way. All right, so, okay, expiration date. If the certificate has expired, it has expired and it's going to be bad. Do you care as a consumer when the certificate's going to expire? Not. If you've got an internal PKI, using Edge is not the way you would find out when that certificate's going to expire. There's probably...
If you wanted to quickly tell the business that, oh, by the way...
Yeah, you want to see the certificate chain or encryption, send name...
That's excellent feedback, and I do have some contacts with the Edge team. So I will feed that back as a feature. SharePoint compatibility, viewing certificates. So here's the Microsoft answer though. Edge is always evolving, right? It's like Chrome. No. If Internet Explorer 10 came or 8 came out, you've got another 18 months before you're gonna get another version of that browser, right? With Edge, it's gonna be 6 on average to get another version of that browser, all right? So what they're not going to do, I'll tell you this right now, what they're not going to do is they're not going to give you 1,600 group policy settings to manage out of the box. They're being really selective. They're not giving you all the knobs and dials, because as soon as you do that, you start getting into permutations of configurations that no one's ever tested before in the known universe. And then you go, why is this broken? The classic example one is that there is an Internet Explorer setting called Do Not Cache Encrypted Pages, which sounds really good to turn on. Why would I want to encrypt? But if you do it, a whole bunch of websites don't work, right? So it's kind of like, give them the settings, you're not going to shoot yourself in the foot. And it's Edge is evolving. Like, you know, It's got a lot more dials to tweak now than you had before. You've got about colon config, which you can actually turn off using grip policy. So for your end users, you can turn about colon config off with the grip policy, which you couldn't before. So you can't push extensions out yet. Extensions are a thing now in Edge. You can't push them out. But that is good feedback that I know Microsoft are aware of, and it will be interesting to see if that comes out. So I would think that that's something that they're working on. So being able to push an extension out to a machine, or at the very least allow certain extensions, because right now it's allow all extensions or none. There's only 20 extensions, so there's not a lot you can do damage with. But eventually they'll get to a point where you should be able to get to a point where they can whitelist that. So who wants to very quickly see how you can configure the taskbar in Windows 10? Right? You could do this in Windows 7, and they took it away in Vista. No, you couldn't do this in Windows 7. You couldn't do it in Vista. Maybe you could do it in Vista. Did Vista have the quick launch down the bottom? I think Vista you could. They took it away in Windows 7. So what you can do now. So really quickly, export start layout. Used to be able, it exports this configuration here, but it now also doesn't export the configuration for your taskbar. But what it does is that it's the same XML file now that configures the start menu as it does the taskbar. So this user here, me, is basically running. I reset this person's user profile. So that's the default user profile there. That's the ones you get out of the box. So if you have a look, and this is a case of, here's one I created earlier. Sorry, I'm just looking for the file. Start layout. So this is actually the same XML. What you can do is, let's say, for example, I'm just trying to think of one. Pin to start. PowerShell. I was just here, wasn't I? Sorry. What I'm trying to show is that you can export the required information now and put it into here, which is custom taskbar layout collection. If you go to my website, grippolicy.biz, that was the most recent blog I have on my website. It has all the references to the MSDN and MSDN references on the XML. But let's say, for example, you pinned an app here and you just want to know what it is. So it's export start. And then I'm going to go start.xml. So if I actually have a look now in my C users. Oh, no, not that one. This one. So this is the start layout. So let's say, you know, these are all pre-installed default, which aren't installed there because I don't have access to the internet. But some of them here, like Windows Live Mail, Windows Calendar. So I can actually copy that app user mode ID. And I can either put in the actual path to something traditional like an Explorer link, or I can actually put in something like this, you know, Microsoft Word, or I can just go, I'm hoping that will put in Windows Live Calendar in the taskbar. Let's see if it does. At the very least, I'm going to get Paint, and I'm going to get Internet Explorer. And of course, I just told you how to get rid of Internet Explorer, so now I'm going to show you how to put Internet Explorer back in the taskbar. So it doesn't really make sense, but you know, bear with me. So I'm going to save that, and that's hosted on a share, and that share is DC. That's it. So for the benefits of the group policy, it's actually the same group policy that you use. It's the start layout group policy, which is actually here. Oh, this is a nice bug. Yeah, it's a really good bug. Let's get back to that. Okay. Start layout, which was 2016, Windows 2010. It's actually the same group policy in 8.1. They just, I don't know, they changed it a little. So we apply that. So now that the user has that, GP update. Now remember, this is what I got here. Oh, it looks like I've got, oh no, PowerShell's running. Did that GP update? Yep, it's running. Computer and user is done. It's not real time, so I need to sign out. Hey. So Internet Explorer, Paint, and Calendar now. All right, so the reason that that got rid of, so notice, doesn't let you get rid of Cortana, doesn't let you get rid of TaskView. Those two are there to stay, you got it. All right, but what it does is because in the XML file, you have one or two modes. You can actually say keep the defaults, or if you have a look at the XML, replace. So what it does is it replaces the default out-of-the-box shortcut icons. So you can completely replace all the defaults so you can get rid of Edge. No, you don't want to do that, but you could if you wanted to, because Edge is a great browser, remember? And so you can now push basically your own taskbar now to the users. Now, here's the caveat. If a user can still unpin things, they still have the ability to unpin it. And if you do a group policy update, it ain't going to push it back until you touch the XML file again. And once the date timestamp is updated on that XML file, it will push out those settings again. So if you really wanted to get in a tug of war with the users, you could have a script that touches the file every 120 minutes. And it would always come back every time they log off and back on. But it's better than nothing. We can all agree, you can now configure it without having to. Previously, the only way you could configure that was actually by modifying the default user profile. And that was the only way you could configure it. And then once you'd set it, the user had complete control over it. Right, so now at least you can put in, strongly suggest, sort of, you know, look, if the user really wants to unpin that, then they're the ones who are trying to shoot themselves in the foot. You know, at least it's going to come back after a little while. You can bring it back. So 1607, that is a 1607 feature. That's not a 1511 or 1507 feature. So look, I thought I'd give that as your bonus content because, you know, if you're about Edge and Windows 10, you know, that's pretty cool. You now have the ability to actually customize the taskbar, which is something you didn't have since Windows 7 days. So I'm glad that they're bringing that back. Windows 8 had nothing. Couldn't configure the start menu or anything. So they're kind of listening to feedback. So that's really great. So I'd like to thank you all for coming tonight. That concludes tonight. If you have any questions, I'm happy to stick around and ask. But thanks for coming, guys. At this stage, next year, 18th of February is looking highly likely to have Infrastructure Saturday. Woo-hoo. Yes, very good. That's the Saturday after Ignite. Hopefully, we are going to get a couple of speakers from Seattle. Ben Armstrong's one of them, I'm hoping again. Another one I'm hoping, I can't commit to this, but I'm hoping we'll get some other people from Seattle coming along and talking about Windows deployment as well. Plus a whole bunch of MVPs and Microsoft employees as well. So I'm hoping, so kind of earmark 18th of Feb. What is Infrastructure Saturday? It's like this, except it's 15 sessions going all day in all these three meeting rooms and there's about 100 of us rather than just 20. Okay, it's a full day event and it costs nothing, All right, it's always paid by sponsors. So if you want a full day of learning on a Saturday, lots of food, meeting lots of people in the industry, if you've missed out on Ignite and you still want to get some, you know, the latest and greatest news on Microsoft technologies and infrastructure Saturday, hopefully you'll see an email if you're on our mailing list by all, without any doubt, if it's going to happen. And the registration will hopefully be open soon. So keep that date in mind. We've got a few other sessions planned for early next year as well, so that'll be great. So thanks for coming along, guys. Hope you have a great Christmas. See you later. Thanks.